The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words. And those taking part are Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, Dillis Powell, and Dennis Norton. Here's round one to try and test their respective vocabularies. 2 marks if they get the meaning of these words right. Anne Scott James, what is a snaffle? S-N-A-F-F-L-E, snaffle.
Oh, it's a kind of bit.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of the sort of harness of a horse.
Where do you put it, Anne?
Well, in its mouth.
And does it like it? I mean, I want a slightly more accurate description of a snaffle.
When you have, if you have 4 reins,
yeah,
they all get mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
And the snaffle is the one which doesn't do the hardest work. It's a sort of rather weak kind of bit.
Yes, that'll do. 2 marks, well done, Anne. It's a bridle without the curb, a quite sort of slender, plain, jointed bit, and you normally have it not with a double but a single rein, so that to ride a horse on the snaffle means to manage your horse gently rather than crudely or abruptly. Thank you. What is tonight? T-O-N-I-T-E. Tonight or tonight? Tonight, I think.
It's what flashes in neon lighting on Broadway to indicate there's a show on that evening.
Oh, perhaps you did right.
Tonight.
Yes.
Is it like dynamite and joke
yes.
night?
Yes, very much like that.
Well, they're fine. Then jellignite is explosive jelly. And toe, no, it can't be. It's a sort of the reverse of a rapidly ingrowing toenail.
Yes, it would look very like that on a rather large scale.
It's an explosive.
I'll give you your 2 marks. It is, in fact, a powerful gun cotton explosive, mainly used for blasting. It comes from a Latin word meaning to thunder. Dennis Powell, what is a lar? L-A-R.
It's a deity.
What kind?
Singular. Of the house.
Yes. Would you like to sort of explain a bit more?
House deity. The Lares and Penates.
Yes.
We are the domestic protecting deities.
For which nation?
The Romans.
You've got everything absolutely right. 2 marks it is. All right, Dennis Norton. Dennis, what is a bum boat?
A bum boat is a boat that is hard astern. It's what people row out to ships in to sell sort of vegetables and carved wooden things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To visiting ships.
Well done, Dennis. 2 marks. Now, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the 2 women members of the teams to go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the programme, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. Anne Scott James and Dennis Norton, your quotation is, to each his sufferings. And Dennis Powell and Frank Muir, yours is, count your blessings one by one. And at the end of the And at the end of the programme, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their idea of how these came to be said or written. Round two is about places far and near. 2 marks if you can tell me what books by what authors you associate with the following. Anne Scott James, Barsetshire.
Oh, the novels of Anthony Trollope.
Which one?
Well, Barchester Towers to start
yes.
with, and a great many others.
Well, that is strictly accurate. I was trying to get a sort of long list from you.
Oh, The Warden.
Yes, The Warden.
Framley Parsonage.
Yes.
Come on, quick.
No.
You're doing very well. You're doing very well.
I'm encouraging.
the last Chronicles of Barsetshire,
that's
which
right.
is the sort of summing up of the whole thing.
Jolly good.
Now.
Yes, very good indeed. Frank Muir, Brobdingnag. It's very hard to pronounce. Brobdingnag. Brobdingnag.
What was the question?
I'd like to know what books by what author you associate with that very curious word.
Book two.
Yes. You're dead right.
Book two of Gulliver's Travels. That's the shortened version of the long title, which escapes my memory, by Jonathan Swift.
Well done. And the sort of chaps who lived there, what do they look like?
Biggish, on the whole. Much bigger than our hero.
Yes, absolutely right. Well done, Frank. Dennis Powell. Eatanswill. Eatanswill. Eatanswill.
Dickens.
Yes.
Pickwick Papers.
Yes. And what was it?
It was an area.
Yes.
An area, a political area. An electioneering area.
Well done. Yes, you've said quite enough. That's fine. Two marks. Eatanswill in Dickens's Pickwick Papers was a place visited by Pickwick during the course of an election, and there were two terrific candidates. One was called Fitzkin, and the other was called Slumkey, and Slumkey won in the end. Two marks. Dennis Norden, Transylvania.
Ah, Transylvania. Well, there's all sorts of... I think it was originally Dracula.
Yes.
By Bram Stoker. But they also have used it in umpteen stories since, which all start with a coach coming in and saying, could you tell us the way to the castle? And I wouldn't go there after nightfall if you paid me.
That's absolutely right. Well done, Dennis. Two marks. Transylvania is the country in which the novel Dracula, novel about vampires by Bram Stoker, was placed, and it was supposed historically to be a place that a lot of chaps who were supposed to be vampires came from. It was a province, a mountainous province of Romania, as it was before the 1914-18 war. All right. Next round is a round of sentences which try to include some rather difficult or unusual words. So please can you give me, for 3 marks, a rough idea of what the following sentences mean, defining the difficult words as closely as you can. Anne Scott James. I suffer from anosmia, she said scathingly. Otherwise, I would have recognized you for the black, white-striped, bushy-tailed, American carnivorous animal that you are.
Well, anosmia means I haven't got a sense of smell.
Yes.
And therefore, I don't recognize you for a skunk.
Absolutely right. Well done. 3 marks. Splendid. Frank Miller. Pretty little Lo San accidentally rubbed Ho Chan's beautiful kakimono against her and got smudges all over her obi. Kakimono, K-A-K-E-M-O-N-O, and obi, O-B-I.
Oh, a scroll or a painting?
Yes.
Of course, yes.
Rubbed her Chan's beautiful kakimono against her and got smudges all over her obi.
Is that bow at the back?
Yes.
It is a bow at the back in most of the
Yes, but what's at the bow of the back of?
The kimono.
Oh, no,
the bow at the back of a sash.
Not a better than that.
Yes, yes. Sash.
Kakimono is a Japanese wall picture, which is usually painted on silk and mounted on rollers. And I suppose if it were freshly painted, the paint could have come off. But obi is that bright, broad sash worn by Japanese women and children. Dennis Powell, I cannot eat this spitchcock. Give it to my spitz. S-P-I-T-C-H-C-O-C-K and S-P-I-T-Z. I cannot eat this spitchcock. Give it to my spitz.
Spitz is a dog, I think, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Spitz is a dog. and spitchcock is a bird which has been hung too long, like a kakimono.
No.
Spitchcock.
Spitchcock. That's no? different, yes.
Oh, it's different, is it?
It's very different.
I don't know what that means either, so it doesn't help.
It's about as opposite from a bird as you can get.
It's a fish.
That's right. Yeah, spitchcock right. is an eel split and broiled as a dish that you eat, but some don't. And spitz or spitz is a small dog with a very pointed muzzle, a Pomeranian, in fact, and it's just the German word, a pointed dog, spitzhund. Two. Dennis Norden, Hans, cried the keeper angrily. Don't throw your pretzels at the quetzals. P-R-E-T-Z-E-L-S, and Q-U-E-T-Z-A-L-S. Don't throw your pretzels at the quetzals.
A pretzel is a thing that you have in bars in America when you have a drink. It's like a figure eight,
yes,
sort of baked thing. With it's very salty, and it helps you to drink more. That's if you need any help.
Yes.
And a quetzal is what they wore in the Royal Hunt of the Sun, the Inca,
yes,
chief whose name isn't on the tip of my tongue. It's about halfway down my gullet, so I won't really hang about waiting for it.
Montezuma or
Atahualpa? No, Atahualpa. It was a kind of headdress that
yes,
he wore.
Yes, made from what, Dennis? You'll get there if you know what the headdress is made of.
With feathers of some
yes,
kind,
right.
Some kind of...
It's pretzel or bretzel, and as Dennis quite rightly said, they're shaped like a knot or figure eight, a crisp kind of biscuit, very salty, and used as a relish with beer, starting in Germany and no doubt in the places like Minnesota, the German parts of the United States as well. The quetzal is one of the most beautiful Central American birds with most beautiful and gorgeous tail feathers, Aztec word. Now we come to the last round and go back to those two quotations I gave the teams earlier in the program. Two Marks and Scott James, can you give me the origin of your quotation? To each his sufferings. Mm.
The most suffering thing I can think of in the whole of literature is King Lear.
How about a public school?
Oh, Eton.
Yes. Who wrote about this?
Who wrote about Eton? Gray.
Yes, this is Thomas Gray's poem, Ode on a Distant Prospect of Eton College, and it runs, to each his sufferings, all are men condemned alike to groan, the tender for another's pain, the unfeeling for his own. Now, Dennis Bauer, can I have the origin of your quotation? Count your blessings one by one.
It's a song, I think. Sung by Gracie Shields.
Hold on. It's a song of which the music was written by Reginald Morgan and the words by Edith Temple. It was published in 1946. Well, now I'm going to ask Dennis and Frank to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And in this round, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Dennis Norden and to his quotation, to each his sufferings.
Some of you may notice that when we came into the studio, I gave Frank, handed to him, two small cast iron rings. This is part of a ceremony that happens between us every 6 months, the exchange of the two small cast iron rings. And it dates back to the time, over 3 years ago, when we terminated our partnership. Frank to go off to find his fortune as a television executive, and me to stay and lose mine as a writer. You see, but like all the end of all long relationships, the question came up of dividing up between us all the stuff we had accumulated over 14 years of partnership. This was quite an easy job in some respects. I mean, things like typewriters and filing cabinets and ashtrays we could do quite easily on this sort of one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me sort of principle. It got a little bit more trying when it came to paper clips, because he said that straightened out ones only count half. And paperclips are always difficult to count anyway because they're so promiscuous. You know, so you put two paperclips in a drawer, one either end of a drawer, shut the drawer, come back to it an hour later, they're linked. Anyway. But the real crunch, as they say, the problem, came on one particular item of furniture, which we had, the last remaining item, which we bought very early in our joint career. In fact, the very first time that a producer had said to us, when we presented him a script for a series, look, why don't you have a hand at casting some of the girls? So it was a sofa in question. It gives you some idea of our naivety at that time, in that we bought an L-shaped sofa that we never really got the use out of it that we intended, because it's very difficult to find L-shaped actresses. See, but nevertheless, it had come in useful over the years to sort of have a kip after lunch. The question came of dividing this between us. You see, because it had only four legs, one at each end, like a cow, you know. So that if we had done the trick of dividing it in the middle, we'd both have been left with a rather strange-looking item of furniture which just leaned down to the floor. So Frank said, I tell you what. He said, I'll take it, and you can come and visit it at weekends and holidays and special occasions. I said, no, no, I'll take it, and you come and visit it. And he said, no, no, I... And anyway, that's where the real sort of Barney started, and raised voices and recriminations and tears and, you know, I've given you the best years of my life, you know, all that sort of thing. And we decided the only way to settle the problem was to seek the advice of a third party. So we went to this Partnership Guidance Bureau, who were very good, I must say, you know, after doing the psychiatric tests and all that sort of thing. And the chap there said, well, what I suggest is that you take the sofa alternately. One of you, he said, Mr. Muir, you have it for 6 months. He said, and then you, Mrs. Muir, Dennis Norton, he said, you have it for the next 6 months, which is what we decided. So he took it off to his new office on the North Circular Road for 6 months, and at the end of 6 months, I came and took it back to my office in Regent Street. 6 months later, he came. Now, you may say, didn't that cost a lot of money in removal vans? The answer was yes, it did. Until Frank, who behind all the emotionalism is very practical, said, well, it's very much easier. He said, we both have cars. If we towed it to and fro every season. Well, which we did, but you see, and it's very difficult to tow an L-shaped object because you get what I think is technically known as the jackknife effect. Generally, right in the middle of the Harrow Road. Then Frank came up with this very good idea, which is two little cast iron rings, which we screwed in to the end of the arms, the L arms of the sofa, and thus could tow it behind the car with the back of the sofa in a wedge shape behind. If you understand, I do hope you're following me because I'm not good on this kind of thing. Which we did, and but the point is, once you get them in your office, you then have to take the rings out. Otherwise, people come and sit down, and they say, what are these rings on your sofa for, you know? And you say, they're for towing. And then they try to put their toe in it, you know? So we take them, so what this ceremony is you take, the chap who has it, takes them out, and then when the time comes for the transfer, he gives the rings to the other partner or ex-partner for towing back again. And that's the explanation. That's a very simple little ceremony, which may have puzzled some of you. Now, you may think that it's a very silly thing for two adults to do, but that is one of the things that you get at the end of any long relationship. You get this residue of rather bizarre triviality. Or if I may put it rather better, or as Thomas Gray put it, to each his sofa rings.
And now on to Frank Muir, and if you remember, his quotation was, count your blessings one by one.
Hugo the Wise Bunny Rabbit. A Tale of Animal Land by Frank Muir, aged 48 and a half. Bunny rabbits are wise and contented animals, and of all the rabbits, the wisest and contentedest was Hugo the Bunny Rabbit. Now, Hugo lived and worked in the center of animal land. And Hugo kept a club for the bunnies. And Hugo called his club the Playthings Club. And when all the little animals went to the playthings club, they were greeted by a plaything who, and the little girl plaything, was dressed up like a human being girl. And they had a roulette wheel, and lots of gambling went on. Oh, yes. Lots of water bowls used to go there, and which was very bad because, as you know, a vole and his money are soon passed on the third floor, they had a cabaret, and sometimes it was usually something like a razor-billed duck would do a striptease or something like that. And Hugo, the bunny rabbit, our wisest and most contentedness of all bunny rabbits, when the night was over, he used to go round all the four wands, the east wand, and the south wand, and the north wand, and the west wand, and count that all the little bunnies were safely in bed. Because he cared for them. They were entrusted in his care. He used to count in the east wand, 24, divide by 2, that's 12. And the east wand, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10, divide by 2, that's 5, all present. You see, because when bunnies sleep, when little bunny girls sleep, they sleep all curled up, and you can't tell one from the other. You have to count their ears and divide by 2. Well, one night, they had, it was a very special gala night at the Playthings Club. They had a very special cabaret. And after it was all over, Hugo went round and counted all the ears of his little playthings, and the east one is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all present, south one, all present, north one, all present, but west one, one little bunny missing. Hugo was consternated. He rushed outside. Something must have happened to this little girl in his charge. And outside, he met an old friend of his, a funny old geezer. Wasn't it a funny old geezer? He was a rather ancient water otter. He said to him, I've lost one of my little playthings. She's not asleep. Have you seen her? And the funny old geezer said, ah, there's danger in the air. I sent it. I think she's been abducted. So they called the birds on the air and say, is there an interloper? Because all fairy things are afraid of the robber, the farrier robbers, who come and trap them and snatch them and make fur coats out of them. Then they got a message, as luck would have it, that a robber had been sighted on Hampstead Heath, and he had a sack over his shoulder. So they crept up on him, and Hugo said to the old water otter, nip him in the ankle. So the water otter, because he's got strong teeth, and the water otter nipped him in the ankle, and the robber, the farrier robber, dropped his sack and ran away howling through the night. And they opened the sack, and there was a very frightened little plaything bunny. She escaped scot-free, and as they were walking back, escorting little bunny back, the old water otter, the funny old geezer, said to Hugo, you know, you are the happiest and the contentedest of all the bunnies, and it's because you look after the little things in your care so much, don't you? And Hugo said, I always made myself a rule, always before I go to sleep, count your playthings one by one.
By your vote, ladies and gentlemen, the contest of the two stories is won by Frank Muir, but nevertheless, the entire contest is won by Dennis Norden and Anne Scott James, and that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.
Thank you.